OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties. One county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
Now we're hoping he's there. Stephen Kelly, hello.
How's it going? You okay?
You have no idea the consternation you've been causing here behind the scenes. This is a live radio show. There's fireworks behind the scenes there, but we have you now. How are you doing?
I'm good. Not too bad, yourself?
Where are you in the world at the moment? It's Joe here, by the way. Sorry, I know you're talking about 20 different people. How are you getting on? Where are you?
I'm actually in Dublin, which is hilarious why the reception's so bad.
Okay.
Typical.
I thought you were travelling across America or something. So,
And then Kathmandu with the bad reception. But no, I'm actually in Dublin. I'm very close to where you probably are. So it's crazy that the reception's so bad. But sure, what can you do?
How have you been getting on?
Yeah, good. It's strange times. And just, you know, obviously you're doing your bit trying to stay at home and stay safe and, you know, social distance. But it's just, like, it's unlike anything any of us have ever experienced before. So it's very hard to kind of come to terms with it. And, you know, for me, my wife Helga and the two children were always very close. So, you know, in that sense, nothing's really changed. It was always the four of us, if we're in the UK or Ireland. And, you know, when we come back here, we'd see family, obviously, a lot more than we would do now. Mm. But it's, it's just strange times. But like I said, we're doing our best. And my wife is trying to homeschool her little boy. And, you know, it's going well. He's lucky. He's a clever little boy and he wants to work hard and he's trying. So I'm sure that must be very difficult for a lot of people because, you know, you're trying in circumstances that you never would experience. And we're very fortunate there. Our little boy is very receptive to his mammy looking after him and teaching him, which has been good.
Great. Are you living in Dublin full time? I wasn't sure.
No. I still live in the UK. It's just kind of, we still live in England. Like, I'm at game. Well, I used to be at games most weekends until all this happened. So, and, you know, when I retired, you kind of make a decision what you want to do with my wife being Irish as well. That was always going to be a draw for us to come home, but we were settled. I've been in the UK over 20 years and my wife, she moved over a long time as well. So she actually did a master's degree in university in England. So, you know, we were very much settled into the lifestyle there, and our son is in school and our little girl too. She'll be starting next year too. So it's kind of hard to uproot once you've kind of embedded down that way.
Yeah, it's funny, you've been over in the UK more than half your life now. I think you were 16 at Spurs.
It's hilarious. I've been in the UK longer than I was in Ireland, which is crazy. And, you know, at least I've never lost my accent, which most people would have. I don't think it would be happy if I came back with a different one. No, I've always kept very close to Ireland. And like I said, we're fortunate enough to get to come back here really often and see family and friends and everything. So we were always very close distance, and it's only a short flight if you ever need to get back as well. So
we've been doing this thing of late, in lieu of not having European fixtures, where various people, footballers and non-footballers, have come on and give us their favourite European moment. And for you, it's Europa League, clearly. It's the year Fulham. Yeah. And we had a couple of Irish Fulham fans coming out of the woodwork when we said you were coming on, texting, remembering 10 years ago this night, the final, actually, which is
it was actually technically, I think it was last night. It was the 12th, I think it was, because there were supposed to be quite big celebrations for it this year. And everything's obviously gone because of everything that's gone on at the moment. But, you know, the club have been in touch with all of us about celebrating at some point. And it's just obviously that's been kiboshed because of what's currently happening with the world. But, yeah, it's just, I suppose it's pretty remarkable. Even looking back in the now, you kind of think that really happened for us to get so far and to beat the teams we did to get to the final. And it was pretty remarkable, yeah.
So this is Fulham. You were there in 2009 to 2013. Roy Hodgson is the manager. Mm. It's Atletico in the final. That's not your favourite memory, clearly. Yeah. So before that, group stages include Roma in the group, knockout stages, Shakhtar Donetsk, who, by the way, Mark Schwarzer said were by far the toughest team you came up against in some ways. But Shakhtar Donetsk in the knockouts were your first game. I wouldn't have had them down as the toughest team you came across in that run.
without a shadow of a doubt, Shakhtar Donetsk was the toughest game. I don't think we touched the ball for 90 minutes in either of those games. It was unbelievable. Like, the players they had at their disposal. William was there. I remember playing left back in the game over there, and we just were under the cosh the whole time. We defended for our lives and we ended up getting goals. And I think after the game, they were walking off the pitch going, how have we not won? But we performed really well and we had a very good structure and shape about us. But I remember after about 70 minutes in the game, thinking, God, this is tough. And they took off the winger and I was like, delighted. I was like, this is great. And then they threw on this young lad. I think it was this guy, young Douglas Costa. I think he was 18. Oh my gosh. It was just unbelievable. But I think at the time they were just ploughing money into bringing loads of Brazilians and players, and they had Cernan, the captain of Czech Republic at the time. Just they had a great side, and they just played some amazing football. And again, people wouldn't have thought that would have been probably the toughest side we faced, but without a shadow of a doubt, any player to speak inside, they said Shakhtar was just two relentless games.
Okay, well that makes it, I understand more now, because Schwarzer gave the impression, he was saying they may be the best side I've ever played against. He was saying they were.
I honestly think if you were to say, getting completely played off the, as in possession wise, not touching the ball, Shakhtar, and then possibly maybe one of the Spain sides that wanted the Spain when we played them in America once or twice, or Ireland were phenomenal. But okay, for just pure possession, I'm not too sure there's many sides I played against that would have been so one sided in that game.
Okay, well on paper that passed me right by. So you've Shakhtar, there's obviously Hamburg and Wolfsburg to get to the final. The round of 16 is where we're jumping in. This is Juventus. Now, this is Juventus post-scandal, so they're not peak of their powers. But at the same time, this is Juventus with the likes of Trezeguet, Cannavaro, Fabio Grosso, Camoranesi, Del Piero, I think, as well, is still there. So they're no chumps, clearly. You go to Turin and you lose 3-1. So that's it. That's game over. Thanks, everyone. You're not going to turn this over. Do you remember much about Turin?
Yeah, I do remember. I actually didn't play in Turin. But I was on the bench, so I watched the game, and I remember being freezing, going there, thinking, wasn't expecting to get much because the side they put out was very strong, and they played very well. We kept ourselves in the game at times, but they just overpowered us. But then we got that goal, and everybody kind of thought, an away goal, I know it's still an uphill task, but at least we've got something to cling on going into the next leg. And I think everybody just felt a bit dejected because we come through Shakhtar, who had played better than against against Juventus. So Shakhtar were probably a better side in the sense we faced a tougher task. So we came through that, we kind of felt, after the first leg in Turin, it was almost like it was disappointing that we couldn't grind something in and get a better result because of the Shakhtar results. We felt we were able to get something there, and this side just didn't seem to cause us as many problems as the Shakhtar team did. So it was disappointing, but we kind of felt the fact we've got a goal away from home, you never know what could happen. And then I suppose they scored after like 5 seconds.
I think
5 minutes. Trent scored after 5 minutes in the first half in the next leg, and I was like, "Why?" If anything, I think that just eased the pressure, took the focus off, and we were able to go play.
Bobby Zamora scores. Bobby Z, remember Bobby? Zoltan Gira scores. At 82nd minute, Clint Dempsey scores this ridiculous, the goal of his life, really. It's a chip. To put Fulham 4-1 up. This is Fulham, who will finish 12th in the Premier League that year. 4-1 up at home at Craven Cottage against Juventus. Give us, like, I mean, so that's a nuts moment. That's the moment, isn't it?
I think for any Fulham fan, for any Fulham player that was lucky enough to be involved in this, they would say that was the game that you most remember. Like, there's, when you go back to the cottage now, there's pictures of that scoreline and the scoreboard up around the change room, around the stadium, and it's just, I suppose the magnitude of how big Juventus actually are as a club is what brings it home. These just a behemoth of a side, and the players that played for them, and the fact that you still have players like Del Piero and Cannavaro, like you're talking about World Cup winners. I was actually fortunate enough to get Del Piero's jersey after the game, so it's unbelievable keepsake for myself. But just you think of back to when I kept playing computer games, and there was always pick Juventus because he had Zidane and he had Nedved and he had Davids and they had ridiculous. So just a huge, huge club, and no one would have given Fulham a chance going into that leg, especially with the being 3-1 down from the first one. But to come back in the way we did, in the manner we did, and I know we were fortunate enough, Cannavaro got sent off and Zabina went off in the last, I think it was already done at that stage, but it was just an amazing, amazing experience, and for everybody involved, just something that we'll cherish and remember for the rest of our lives.
Schwarzer was there, you were there, Konchesky, Breida Hagelaand, Damien Duff was there, you can forget that,
Duffer.
Chris yeah. Bard, Stephen Davies, Zoltan Giro was a lovely player, Bobby Zamora,
yeah.
Danny Murphy at that stage, still a really good player. So it's very, that's a very tidy team, and you've Roy Hodgson, who's ultra experienced, just clearly an excellent manager, and then you've got the Craven Cottage factor. Fulham at that time, it seemed like a very enjoyable, nice club to be playing at.
It was a great team. It was why I chose to sign there, really. They'd been in for me the season before and it just didn't materialise. When they came back in again and they were in Europe, I just felt this is a great opportunity for me to go and play at a very good side. And their wife, Herod, was a very good manager. And when I went down there, it was all true. You know, Roy is he's very meticulous. He's on the training field every single day. It can be a bit monotonous at times, don't get me wrong. And there used to be a joke, the lads were begging for a five-a-side because they just didn't come around that often. But it was so evident that what we worked on the training pitch would just happen on the weekend. And even though we would really do our homework and we'd know very much about the teams we're playing against, we would rarely change or shape our system to suit another team. We always kind of stuck to our fundamentals of what we did. And it's because we worked so hard in the training ground, just very simple movement, but effective and work ethic. And we had a good side. We had players that were very experienced Premiership players that had been around for a long time. They knew to play the game. They knew when to kill the game. A lot of people that there wouldn't have been many screamers or shouters, but just people that knew how to, you know, take a game with a scuff in the neck or you know, run the touchdown or run the play down when we needed to. So, but Roy at the helm was excellent, and he was just a manager who you'd always remember as being very, very tactile in the way he went about things and just excellent in the way he set us up. And like I said, it was monotonous at times, but it really, really worked.
Mm. So in your life at that stage, you went from Roy Hodgson training sessions to Giovanni Trapattoni training sessions. Doesn't sound like it's not the most exciting Monday to Friday existence.
No, not at all. And I think Roy had a bit of that Italian in him because that's where he kind of cut his cloth a bit. He was in Italy for a while as a manager, and you could see when you worked on the Trapattoni and you worked on the Hodgson, you could see where Roy got a lot of his ideas from, that Italian style, four at the back set up well, solid, fullbacks linking in when they could, but a big onus on work ethic and double teaming men and getting around and getting close, and you could understand it. But yeah, no, it wasn't exactly this football that you go and be extremely enjoyable. But again, you're playing football every weekend. You're playing the winning side, which is more enjoyable than if you were in a side that played free-falling football and was losing, I'd say.
You missed the final. I couldn't find out why. Was it injury or drop?
Oh, yeah. I got injured against Tottenham in one of the last games of the season. Oh. And I had a dead calf, which is strange, but I kind of calcified in my calf. So it turned hard into like a little bone. And I ended up getting back fit about a week before the final game. And it didn't materialize that I got in the squad for the last game, which was infuriating and so hard to take. But that's football. Yeah. You know, there's these times and things happen and there's nothing you can do about it. And like I said, I played in so many of the games to get us there. I missed out. Again, I was injured for the semi-final, and then as manager, I got back fit not too long before the final, and the manager picked the same squad, basically. So it was hard for me because I played a big part in all the games getting up to that point, but it's just something you take on the chin and nothing you can do about it. And, you know, you look back and I feel I could have played, I should have played, and if I had been probably trained a bit longer, I could have probably helped the team out more, but nothing you can do about it now, and you got to look back at the good times. And I suppose the game that stands out for me and probably most people would be the Juventus game, and I suppose I'm delighted that I was a feature in that one.
Well, yeah, true. Were you the type of player who would have fought your case when Roy Hodgson says you're not quite ready for me for the final, I'm going to stick with how things were, or did you take it on the chin, say, you know, don't cause a fuss type?
Oh no, you fight your corner, you know, of course you do. You do it within the realms of being, you know, I would never be the type of person that throws my toys out of pram and kick up a fuss and disrupt the team because you're going to a major final. But, you know, you let the manager know your sentiments at the time and you tell them what you're thinking and why you feel you're capable. And you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And then you go on with it. Once it's over, then you get behind the team and support the lads because you're still in a major tournament. And, you know, as much as you might not be able to play in it, you feel like you've done a lot to get us there and you deserve to be in a position that if we went up to win this, you end up having a winner in a major tournament that, you know, not many people in their career get to have. So, you know, even though I have a runners-up medal, that's still something I cherish. It's, you know, and many Irish players get to say they've been to a major European final, not that many in the career. So I'm very lucky in that sense.
Did you watch the game in the stadium from the
Yeah, of course. Yeah, 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 yeah. I travelled. I was right there, right behind the dugout. there was myself and one or two other players that had travelled and just, you know, not made it on the day, basically. But yeah, of course, we watched the game, and just every minute of it gone by, when Simon Davis scored, you kind of felt, oh, it's an opportunity, chance here. And then Forlan with the two goals, and he was, it's funny because we all knew it was time and United hadn't gone that well, but he was just an excellent, excellent footballer. And you knew that when he got opportunity, he scored so many goals. And again, at Glasgow, they've gone on to be a very, very consistent side in European football for the last 10 years, really, and Champions League and Europa League. And I think at that point, they'd won the Europa League. I think it was second or third time they'd won it in very close succession. So it's just a very good side.
Yeah. Was it a bit of a grind going weekend, Thursday nights? You know, that always seems to scupper seasons for a lot of clubs. It's a blessing, and it's not really, I was going to say it's a blessing in disguise. It's no blessing at all for a lot of them when they get into Europe. Like, they really struggle the following year. How did you find it? Because it seems to really hamper a lot of players.
I was okay with it, to be honest. I suppose for myself, physically, I was always quite a fit player, and as much as it was physically tough, and you know, if you had I think we had a couple of long flights to Russia and getting back, and then traveling away. When you travel away on a Thursday and you come back on a Friday groggy after the night flight, and then you have to travel again on a Saturday because your game is away on the Sunday, that's when you'd feel it. But you know, we were inclined to just, the medical staff at the time were excellent, and they were very much monitoring how we were feeling, how we were doing, and you know, training sessions were tapered around how the team were. And we didn't have a big squad. We weren't a huge, big unit. You would have thought we would have struggled more in the league than what we did, because, you know, we were juggling these two tournaments, and we started off extremely early as well. We were back the first round of qualifying for the tournament, and they went all the way through. I think we almost played 60 games that season. So again, we're not a big, big squad. We managed extremely well, and we didn't lose too many players through injury, and we were able to cope with it. But for me, it was just enjoyable. I think the first few group stages was difficult. And then even at the club, I remember at the time at the club, they were saying that it was costing them money almost for us to be in the tournament, because we were travelling so far in the group stages. But as soon as we came out of it and we got through to the last 16 and the last 32 in the quarterfinals, then it became, you can see the full support of everything behind us to go and get onto it. I actually remember, I don't know if you've ever heard the story, but when we beat Shakhtar, we came back to the training ground, and Mohamed Al Fayed was the owner of the club at the time. So he owned Harrods, and he came in and he told us, he said, "You all get a hamper from Harrods for the game. Well done." It was like, great. He got this hamper, and it was like lovely, bubbly, and a bit of caviar and all that, which was amazing. And really, this is brilliant. So then we go on and we beat Juventus. Again, we came in, another hamper for the lads, and we were like, amazing. So then we got to the quarterfinals. He came in and we won the quarterfinals. And he comes in, he's a camper. And I think it was Bobby Z was like, "Can you just give us a voucher instead?" Just shouts out from the back of the changing room. And sure enough, the next week, we all these vouchers from Harrods came for all the players to go and go spend. So it was quite funny. And that kind of continued on to the final as well.
Pretty magical season. Well, listen, 10 years on, thanks for going down memory lane with us. Roy Hodgson's still working, incredibly. So he's
unbelievable. He might not be able to get back on the pitch, though, at the moment, considering his age. He might have to be.
He was asked about it. He said nothing is going to stop him. He's going back. He doesn't care. So, I'm not surprised. Yeah. Stephen Kelly, listen, thanks so much. Stay safe. Cheers for doing that.
Cheers. Thanks, Joe. Speak soon.
OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties. One county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that bald spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.